Yes, of course. Let me stop this. I was just testing.
Chairperson Bagwell. Vice Chair Jolani. Oh, can you guys hear me? Oh. Member Blackwood?
Here.
Member Bunkowski?
Here.
Member Cooley?
Here.
Member Fontanez?
Here.
Member Hillis?
Here.
Member Howell?
Here.
Member Keller? Member Robinson?
Here.
Member Chussey? Member Schutte? A quorum is present.
So, we're going to start with public comment. Anyone wishing to address us?
Thank you. So what we wanted to do, we talked about it, there was a little confusion in how the salon operates for that. So we thought we'd just give a little background on this. What it is and how it's configured. So in the staff report, gave just some general bullet points. It's 212 acres. We're open Monday through Saturday, which everybody knows. We've started, which we took advantage of this year, started being closed New Year's Day, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Started being closed. In 2018, there were some interesting facts. We took in 121,720 loads across the state. When you actually average that out, it's about 500 customers a day. And it's in October, we hit a high of 618. Right now, obviously, when it's nasty out, it's really run. We used to average about 4 years ago, we averaged about 350 days. Now we're really averaging 500 plus per year. And you can see also the 2017 number, we increased about 7,000 trips a year. We have 10 staff out there, 7 folks that are at any given time operators out in the field. On a shift, and 2 folks in the scale house. We have 2 operating permits, air quality permit, or air quality permit operating permit, 2 permits we have in for our solid waste. And last year, we pumped in a little over $1.75 million revenue into the general fund, and currently we're projecting we've got about 37 million. The figures you had in your packet kind of showed, and this is kind of what we got into a little bit last time, figure number 2 kind of shows the footprint of our 212 acres. But then when you get into figures 3 and further back, the colored areas is basically our fill plan. It shows how we're filling the land. That's really the key number of the question. So figure 3 is blue area 1 for C&D is done, or input in the MSW in area 2. So then, when you go to the next figure, I talked a little bit about blasting. We still got the blasting view in the front area, which is C&D area number 2. So we're still actually holding material out of there to harvest and use elsewhere in landfill and we're filling that area. In the meantime, we will continue to fill in that MSW area to the west side. But what we're really seeing right now is on figure five, we're filling that area four, which is closest to the right of way. And then from there, we'll move back over to the side, west side, to fill up as the MSW comes up. Because you can't build the mountain backwards. So we got to put the MSW in and then the C&D budgets at the side of that field once that approved. So then as you flip through the subsequent one, and this is what I was really trying to drive home with everybody, the question was, well, can't we just move somewhere else? Well, no, what ends up happening is we already built the mountain pretty much on the front side, on the north side. We've got some areas that we still got to fill. But predominantly what's going to be happening is building on that south side, then moving over to the west side, and building on that south side, and then eventually we'll get to a point where we'll wrap around to the north side a little bit, but for the most part, it's going to be predominantly, we're always going to be filling something, either our municipal waste or our construction demolition debris, always on that south side. There's just no, we can get away with it for some short periods of time, moving into some clever fills elsewhere, and we bring things up. On that south side of the land. So that's what I was hoping to show. Just kind of give everybody a little picture because I think everybody's got just a little. The land that we have, we've already built the base of the pyramid pretty much. And now we're looking at coming up to the top of the pyramid and spread out. So that's pretty much it. I can't give you a specific date. The time frame and it's going to be a little while down the road, but eventually you'll be able to stand on the firing line and see equipment. And then be able to see over that knob that right now is the backdrop to the rifle range. You'll be able to see, I think, the final build out of the landfill. When I looked at it, it's close to 200 foot above that knob that you see at the back of the rifle range, if you will, that separates the two facilities. So you'll be able to physically see the landfill from the rifle range, eventually. And I would say that there's probably going to be in the terms of 20, 25 years out. But it depends on the income of waste and, you know, there's a lot of variables in there.
So just looking at the figures that you provided, it seems last year we had a positive to the 1.75 million. The numbers are growing in such a way that it would prohibit shooting activities. Is there a way that the income generated from revenue could actually fund the construction of a new range if the range were being pushed out?
So I think that really that comes to the long range planning group that we kind of have working to say, where are we going to be in 5 years? Where are we going to be in 10 years? I don't see the board personally targeting certain revenue sources that aren't germane to the range itself. It doesn't mean that general fund revenues aren't used to meet any needs that the city has. So certainly, as we traverse through this process, and maybe that's part of the decision making, as we say we need a new range in 10 years or 15 years because we're going to hit another choke point, then we certainly would put that into the long-range planning and then put it into the budget process to try and meet that. So personally for me, I don't see us targeting particular revenue sources unless they're germane to the activity itself. So, but you're on a track.
Mm-hmm.
John Jelani, for the record, for the chair, who else uses the facility up there? Other than the residents of Carson City and nearby residents, are there any outside county entities that use or dump at the waste management area?
Yeah, there's many. I mean, we take waste from Reno. We have an agreement with Douglas County. We pull in their waste. We bring it in from anybody. We're not shy to take anybody's money. This is what it comes down to. And excuse me. And they pay appropriately for that. It's 2 to 2.5 times what the in county fee is, what the out of county fees are. So folks that bring us stuff outside of Carson City pay higher rates.
A follow up to that how would you compare the amount that they bring in as what citizens bring in? Is it comparable, less, more, or depending on the time of year? So, for example, the Douglas County, during the holidays, bring in more garbage than, say, Carson and Mount.
It really depends. And it's really what really fluctuates more is our construction demolition debris stuff. That's what really fluctuates. But for the most part, because of municipal waste, it's pretty, I won't say set, but it's pretty predictable. But I'd have to look at the numbers to see exactly what it is.
Any questions? Okay, we're going to close this agenda item, and we're moving on to 4A, which is the director's report. Ms. Fudge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Jennifer Fudge, Parks and Recreation Director. I wanted to provide you with just a couple of quick updates. One, the last time we spoke, there were questions on is there a map about where shooting is allowed and not allowed. There's a copy of restrictions on discharge of firearms. Looks like this in your packet, so you have that available. We've made that available to the public to help guide them about where they can shoot and to help educate them. The sheriff's office has a copy of it. It's been in existence for a while, but we have made that available. Another item I wanted to bring your attention, and I spoke to Member Robinson about this, is AB84 at the legislature. I'm actively working with Reno, Sparks, Washoe, Nevada Land Trust, the city's lobbyist, and many other agencies to work on this. This is a reauthorization approved of what was State Question 1 in 2002. It provided $200 million throughout the state for park trails and open space. The reason I bring this up is the Red Ridge could be an eligible project for funding. It's all about bonding capacity and what is available. Right now, as is, that $200 million wouldn't just become available. It would become available in like $6 million increments and have priorities. However, it's something we would definitely want to see go through, so we have options for funding in those types of categories. In the current draft, as you have right now, it's very, I would say, heavy for the South and a little less for the rurals, which we would actually be incorporating in our rural area. We're working to have maybe a more population-based distribution to increase the funding. As of right now, we would have to compete for $10 million throughout the state outside of Washington. So we're kind of working on that with our partners and trying to have a voice, especially for Northern Nevada and all the world, and working with the State Park Society and many other agencies on that. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. I think an amendment's probably going to be coming forward in the next week or so. We'll be monitoring that, and I can report back to you as that progresses. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of that bill. Questions on that? Sorry, a question in general. I see that the act will become effective on July 1, but since it entails the selling of bonds and a bond capacity, can you see that the dollars would actually be available within the next fiscal year, or do you see it really taking?
I don't actually think it would be available within the next year, and it's a reauthorization of the last one. So there's a question about all of the previous projects that were approved but not funded. Would they go first? I think we have probably more questions than answers at this point. But any questions you all have, if not today, just email me and we'll keep those in mind and I'll try to get answers to those as we go through the process.
Yeah, I'm just interested in the committee understanding that it may be a vehicle for future funding, but I'm not necessarily seeing it as something in this next year that's going to be able to meet any needs. So I just don't want to send us down a path of thinking it's our resolution or answer. It may be our long-term planning answer that you're calling to. Mr. Robinson?
On the availability of the funding that Carson City would participate in, part of that is $30 million that's allocated to the Department of Wildlife. We could be part of that. Same thing with state parks. So it's, we may not be named specifically, but we do have a chance to get part of that. But you're right about the authorizations for the bonds. It could take a while. And I didn't hear the $6 million figure, but I think it's anybody's guess. The state treasurer said it could be up to $20 million, but it depends on our bonding capacity. And it's sure not something that I think we're going to put our hands on in the next 12 months or so.
But I do think the chair's comments are correct. It might be a good potential for the long term and different funding sources. And Member Robinson is correct. I mean, there's $30 million right now allocated or identified for NDAO, which is an increase from the 2002 measure. Any further questions? I have a couple other quick updates, if you don't mind. I did want you to know I haven't received the written NRA report. I've been in contact with them on a regular basis. Basically, what they're doing is the person that conducted the in-person report, they send it back and forth between NRA to finalize the report. So they're in progress. I'm hoping to get that, anytime, but they are actively working on this. I don't want you to think we haven't made progress or that there's nothing happening on that. And as soon as I get that, I'll make sure I update all of you on that. And then I just wanted to acknowledge Member Blackwood. He came forward with a really great out-of-the-box idea to provide or allow for frangible ammunition so we could get some of the shooting bays open and available for the CCW classes and potentially some other opportunities. So we're making bays 2, 3, and 4 available Wednesdays through Saturdays. They can reserve just like they always could through the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club. They have to have insurance. We also created an acknowledgement and thanks to the DA's office for helping us create a form acknowledging the requirement for frangible ammunition while the landfill is open. On Sundays, we don't require that, but anytime the landfill is open, we are requiring frangible ammunition on those 3 days. But it did provide a great short-term solution so we could provide some more use of facilities. So I wanted to thank Member Blackwood on that. We were able to implement that pretty quickly.
The dates, you said Monday, is it Wednesday?
Wednesday through Saturday. Wednesday through Saturday. And it still has the same requirements as we had before for reservations, but it does require two additional forms.
Ms. Fudge, can you like post that on the website so any of the other clubs that may not be aware of that for training or whatever, so they can get the additional forms?
Yeah, we can make sure that's on the city's website. Right now it is on the club's website, the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club, so it has the forms, all the requirements, and everything on that when you're going to the reservation page.
Yeah, the charters, that would be great.
We have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any further questions?
Yep.
Thank you.
Last meeting, you were going to be applying with civil engineers to come up with a proposed design. Have you received any quotes back, timelines, anything?
Thank you. I did meet with Pogomara Design Group. They actually were the ones that designed the Clark County Range. They have a local office in Reno. They have 2 certified range engineers and can provide that civil engineering assistance. I met with them on Friday, and I should have a quote by the end of the week for the show. And the city manager has already authorized us to make that expenditure for the design and engineering piece. So So we'll get that moving forward, and they know our priorities based on what all your comments were last time. Priority one being the shooting base, because that's the easiest design issue to resolve, then the short range, and then the long range. So they fully understand that they need to do this in a tiered approach in a very quick manner, and they're able to accommodate us with the resources available. So I should have a
Just one follow-up question, just to make sure. The services that have been authorized, is it for one phase only, or is it for the entire project as three separate phases?
Well, I have to see the quote, but it would ideally be for all three ranges to get them to the minimum recommended standard, the NRA. I asked for two different quotes, one to adjust our short-term drainage issues that were identified in the report, and then a quote for the long-term drainage issues. I don't see us needing to make that a priority right now. Knowing we will have to get there, I think that's more in our long-term planning. But I just wanted to know, you know, what that would cost, for example.
I'm thinking outside the box again. I have a customer in New Jersey, a gun range. They have 10,000 members, and they throw about 3 or 4 million rounds a year down range at this facility. They also had a serious problem with, because so much lead's going down range of all their backstops, target stands, whatever, being shot up. They have a further problem there that we normally don't have here, and that's they get a lot of rain, which causes erosion of their backstops. What they did to solve their problem is they took tires, stacked them up, and filled them with sand. And they used that to create the barriers and the protection at their facility. Relatively inexpensive, it's very durable, and Steve and I both have seen shoot houses that have been built by law enforcement out of stacked up tires. So you stack the tires up, fill them full of sand, and you've got a very nice and relatively inexpensive barrier. And I happen to have it on good authority that the dump has a lot of tires they'd like to get rid of. So I'm just offering that as a suggestion when you're talking with these engineers. It might be a fast, easy way to build up our barriers and get people back shooting again.
I'm certainly going to pass that on to them. Maybe Mr. Cooley can get the inventory answer kind of prepared so they know any volume that they could actually use if tires is a good, not a bad suggestion. Mr. Bonkowski?
Jim, when you get that bid back from the engineers, is your plan to email that out to the committee members or bring it back to Thanksgiving? Just looking at the timing, how fast we can roll this out.
Yeah, and I told them that, you know, our expectation on the shooting base would be less than a month to get that turned around, and we can look at the other pieces as soon as far because we want to get, we need some estimates of cost to be able to know what we're looking at.
The order that the ranges get done, because if it possibly could be an issue to do the whole range, then I would assume that we've been on seriously at looking at the short range and long range, because long range is going to reduce. So that's going to be a higher priority than the short range. If it ends up coming down to extending the time that it takes to take the whole range, drop that up to the extent.
I'll make sure we get that out to you as soon as I can. Is that it?
Yeah, are these engineers the ones that are going to determine the perimeter for the range?
No, I didn't include that in the scope of work for the fence. We can deal with that in-house with the scope for the fencing and the signage.
Okay.
Thank you. That doesn't need to be engineered. Mr. Girolani?
I'm sorry, July for record. You said phase 2, 3, and 4 are going to be open, which is awesome. What about the first phase?
The first bay has some design deficiencies that could be contributing in having bullets land at the landfill. So we're not comfortable opening that one until it meets standards. But bays 2, 3, and 4 aren't as significant of issues, and they're mostly in compliance, which is great. And then added with the Fringe 1 mission, you know, the city felt that that was something that we, a measure we could take, still providing a safety. They still have to have a range safety officer, so we're dealing with the enforcement and operational issues that were identified from that perspective. And then from a design perspective there, it's really just the slope of the bottom of the range, which is mostly contributing to the drainage issues, but the backstops and the side berms all meet the requirements in those three bays.
Okay, thank you.
So just for clarification, to make sure that we're all on the same page and having the same understanding, what I'm getting from you is you expect the scope of work, in essence, from the vendor relatively shortly, and then you're expecting that the results of that will be pricing or estimates for each of the work areas, and you don't expect that for a month. And then from there, we would be getting together and deciding how we're going to fund it and how we're going to get the items accomplished. So are you seeing at least a 5-week just even to be thinking where we're going?
Well, there's some on-site data that needs to be collected. We need topography, and we need grades of every range, and to verify all the heights for every berm and the backstop. So there's some of that hard data that needs to be collected on-site for them to be able to do their civil design. And then comparing that to what the minimum recommended standards are, we have to identify borrow areas for each. Where are we going to get the dirt? You know, what is the plan for that? Where are the quantities to get to the berms? You know, there's some time that it's going to take for that. So I asked for a separate plan set for every range. It's not going to be complicated. It's not going to be 10 pages at least. It might be 40. But we'll need a plan set for each range. We'll need some details for each berm or backstop and whatever that scope of work is. How are they going to achieve the drainage slopes on there? But we need some of that, and that will take time. I've let them know that the bays are the first priority, and I think that's the direction that we all discussed last time. It's definitely the easiest, the path of least resistance. And it's next to the long range, like Supervisor Gronkowski said, it's what we get the most calls about are the bays. And I would say the long range and the bays are the most heavily used by far. So I would agree, as we look at the long term, you know, we get those estimates of cost. So as they do each plan set, identify the borrow areas, identify the scope of work, we'll get costs as they do those plan sets.
Well, I'm just
trying to get them different priorities, and if we want them to do the base first and then the long range, I mean, I'm happy to have them switch and do that. And then we can get the cost estimates for that. And then the NRA did provide us many suggestions, similar to member Blackwood's suggestions with the tires, but using like hay rail and other things for lateral berms to build them up. There's a lot of, you know, very creative ideas that aren't all dirt work, which is great because dirt work is very expensive.
I certainly think we should explore any good ideas that people have to keep the costs down yet
and
accomplish the goal.
Pass anything on, you know, we're their clients, so they want to make us happy. So anything we can pass on to them, and we're happy to do so.
I was going to say, kind of think to expanding on the tire idea, that would be, it's intriguing to me because it takes up less space than berms do, and it's, you don't have to worry about the slope as much. I mean, vertical wall. Right? So on the side berms, where it wasn't designed, range form designed with side berms, and there's not a lot of space there already, and in fact, that's how people access the range to put up the target. So with the tire idea, it might be easier to design and build that than trying to put in berms that are going to encroach into the range because of the slope required.
What we can work with them to consider all alternatives, not just, you know, the traditional dirt.
Is it, would it be possible, because I think the biggest issue that we're going to have at getting full functional facility is the rifle range, the long range portion, because it points directly at the dump. Is it possible to skew that shooting range about 20 or 30 degrees to the right, and get that away from, pointing directly at the dump, and then also put in appropriate barriers, but with that, because otherwise I think the long range thing is dead in the water.
So we've looked at that. The only thing is you're taking, right now we're aiming at the landfill, and then we're aiming it at the canyon where there's already a recreation area. So while there's probably arguably less use and less people there, you're not changing the situation, unfortunately, by reorienting the range. So we have looked at that. We can look at that with the engineers that we hire, but it's really not changing the situation. Okay, then we're going to move on to item 5 on the agenda. So, Ms. Held, you have a report about signage?
Well, I looked at the NRA regs that I was given. I personally don't think that they apply to our situation because they're regarding trespassing signs and not warning signs to that extent. I looked at several sites. I went to OSHA to see what they had, and I've got and they actually have a picture of a sign for a range. I also looked at the federal explosion signs that the trucks use to see what they look like, what might apply for us. I did find quite an elaborate site up from Canada on building ranges that is 160 pages, and it has 6 pages of just signage with a lot of information. So that's in that report that I gave you, and I have it for you as well. One of my problems is the perimeter signs. Until we know what the perimeter is, I'm kind of at a loss as to how many signs we might need. I did go on Amazon, and I found range warning signs on Amazon. So they're rather dead of all places. I mean, it was just a kick. I was on there. But there's a danger shooting area that's available. And surprisingly, they aren't all that expensive. They range due to the different sizes. They range in prices, but I think the most expensive, there's another one that says warning active shooting area. So the signs are already out there. All we have to decide is what we want, how many we want. So, and as soon as the weather clears up, where I can go down and picture what is there now to see what we need to add, and then the other signs are going to be depending on operations and what we come up with from the operations decision. That's it.
Does anyone have any questions with Ms. Howard? Okay, then we'll move on to member Fontanez.
Yes.
Okay, on operations.
So actually, I was not in charge of operations. I'm not sure about the mix up here. We left Sean Gerlong in charge of operations.
Oh, yeah, your vice.
However, I can make a statement on operations, but
we'll let Sean do his own work. Your vice. Yes.
Thanks, Nick. Sean Gerlong, for the record. I think first and foremost, we have to establish a financial base on where we're going to go with this. It's great, these ideas of thinking outside the box, it's a range of ammunition, we're retired,
give a couple of pictures for a charge to Ranger. Ours are completely in California, which was pretty clean and pretty fresh as well. That's the first thing you do. I think that's where we're going to get the money for the signs, for the improvements, for the burn, the dirt, and all that. That's the first point. Where I think it would be prudent for us and future operations on the range to establish a fee process to charge people have a fee to get into the range for a business, whether it be a vehicle or per shooter or what. I think it would be very prudent for us to come up with some reasonable price to come in and use that way. We're not running Peter to pay Paul kind of revenue. We don't get ourselves in the situation we're in right now. It doesn't mean that the engineer design, I know that it's probably going to be a small fee, but should we choose to later on look at moving the range altogether because of the dump, which I foresee that as an issue. I mean, it's inevitable. It's like the giant elephant in the room nobody wants to look at, but it's growing, you know. We only have so much land out there for the dump to go into. And if that becomes an issue, it would be nice 10 years from now that we do have a coffer established from charging people to go out and use that range to build a secondary range or a primary range somewhere within the city. And I have some ideas of where that would be. That's it right now. Any questions?
Anyone have any questions?
I have questions on the slides. David Lewis for the record. Just one bit more comment than anything else. When looking at fee-based structures, you know, the dump actually has a long history of charging. The residents of Carson City and within our county are now being placed with the burden of determining how to move and operate this forward. I would recommend that we adopt a similar structure so you have multiple fee schedules based on Carson City residents, Nevada residents, and then out-of-state residents as well. Therefore, similar to the dump, the people who use our facilities and can enjoy them will be contributing their fair share toward them if they're not part of our tax base.
Yes, ma'am.
Come up for speed, which I didn't attend. On the operations and the agreement with the gun club, where is that in the process? I understand it's being looked at again, restructured, or maybe it's being put out to bid, but I think that might be relevant to operation.
Thank you, Jennifer Budge, Parks and Recreation Director. So we've had a use agreement with the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club for over 20 years. The agreement is very outdated. It's not accurately reflecting, you know, what's going on even 5 years ago and today. Obviously, our operation is very fluid right now. We're being reactionary, but we're trying to be as responsive as we can to citizens. So the city did provide notice to the club that we wanted to change the agreement and have a conversation with them about, you know, what is this going to look like moving forward. David Navarro and I have a meeting with them on Friday. We're having a conversation on what does that look like next. I believe the club has met and to try to determine, you know, what resources do they even have available to assist the city with their operating because they're really a user group and that was their original intent. And if you look at their bylaws, it's all about, you know, not only utilizing rifles, but it's about promoting safe shooting sports. Which is wonderful. We need those groups to do that, but are they really in a position to be able to, you know, operate the facility? So we're going to have that conversation starting on Friday, and we've discussed even, I think, just at a staff level, while we're moving through this process, maybe we consider a one-year agreement while we figure out a fee structure and we figure out what does that look like in the future. Is it a request for proposal? Is it other options that we should consider that this group might look at as a model that we should look at in the future? But obviously we can't do anything if we don't have a range that's
you know, meet certain standards, and it's difficult to have someone come in unless they're going to make capital improvements. Do we do a partnership? Do we look at, like, the golf course model? I think there's a lot of things we could consider, but we're having, you know, an ongoing conversation. We want to work with them. If it wasn't for the club, that range wouldn't be there in the first place. So I don't want to discount everything that they put in history-wise, and they're really trying to help us out right now. So we are having a conversation with them. I'm open to any suggestions you all may have as we can kind of work and move forward with them. So, Mr. Hillis?
The club absolutely wants to continue to work with the city. In what capacity, I can't tell you what that is today as I see. I'm just one member of the organization. I appreciate mentioning, though, that, you know, it's been a long road, and the club members over the years have contributed quite a bit to the facility. Along those same lines, I mean, right now, my understanding is, but we are a small organization. I would agree. You know, if we have 70 members, I'll tell you right now that we have the number of RSOs we have currently are in the teens. Okay? And on any given Sunday now, it requires 6 RSOs to split the shifts to ensure that the range is actually staying open. I don't know if we were to, I believe, discontinue offering RSO services. Range may be closed on something. I don't know that. However, I can tell you it's extremely taxing on a very small group of individuals who are offering the RSO services. The club has recently, one of the major issues we have, though, we actually don't have access to utilize the range. Yes, I understand the bays are open or it's open on Sundays, but to hold a public match, that would require a reservation for long-term duration time, shutting down a major portion of it to actually conduct a range or conduct a match. I would argue that the operations of the club, since there are many RSOs that shoot, and when we have target competitions, we ensure that the projectiles are actually hitting the backstop. I would argue that the reason that projectiles are ending up in the dump, however it happens, is due to improper shooting technique. I would love to see that if the club is offering up and continuing providing RSOs to ensure that the range is open, is it possible that we could utilize that to simply hold our matches under an extremely controlled environment, because we can determine where the bullets actually hit the backstops to ensure no projectiles leave. We do have the same insurance requirements required, meaning the city is an additional insurer. So I want that to be considered if possible. And I think that right now we've had about roughly, out of those team number of RSOs that we do have, around 10 people are the actual reoccurring volunteers that we have that's donated well over 50 hours our time when we have no access. So you can see that it puts strain on small organizations we have. We have recently met, we have put a call out. The club is willing to train more RSOs at the club's expense to try to increase our pool of candidates to provide this service, but that takes time. So we do have a class scheduled right now for March 1st. I hope that we will have at least adding some more RSOs to the pool. I can't give you a number because, again, volunteer time, they have so 9 hours class.
Only 6 people per class, correct? It's pretty small.
That number can be changed.
Okay.
It can be modified. Currently, the class number is at 6 based on the venue.
Okay.
That's what the limitation
is. Well, and I told the Carson American Pistol Club, if we can provide meeting spaces, if we can help in any way, we're here to help with those because we do have those resources available to us.
And I would like to talk to you after the match to potentially solidify a proposed location if it works out for the first in the event that we do exceed the capacity for the current venue.
We can assist with that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, myself?
I'm not sure who to ask the question to. I have advocated for several years starting to charge for the use of our range, not primarily for all of the out-of-county people that come in and hold CCW classes because they have to pay at their own local ranges. They come down to our range, take up our bays from our residents. So I've advocated that some kind of charge base be set up for that at least. We have to pay to go to the swimming pool. There isn't any reason that we don't have a treasury for our gun range for future improvements. There's just not. As far as the RSOs, my concern is you're not going to get that many people as RSOs to take on the liability of being in that range and having an accident happen. I'm an RSO. Am I going to go down there and work the entire range? No. I'm going to work my bay that has my club in it, shooting. I don't want the liability of a bunch of people I don't know and have them be responsible for an accident as the RSO. So I think you're going to be very limited with that. And my question would be, are other ranges required to have RSOs on site if they meet all the safety requirements? Is that something that is actually necessary?
So I have two things that I would like to say. The capacity of the RSOs on site, we are not enforcement. We cannot force. We have no arresting authority. We are there to educate users on the range. We can tell them you need to have your targets placed at the base of the impact area, not on the top. If they choose not to do that, the RSOs have no capability for enforcement. So that's an issue. The second part of that is I can at least tell you one example of another facility. I'm part of the Palomino Valley Gun Club as well. I ran, and I was the match director for the vintage military match last year. They require the match director to be an NRA certified RSO so that you are in control of that particular event. Now, when you get into public lines, you don't know what their capabilities, what their qualifications are. So all I can speak to is club matches or most likely other commercial entities. Those individuals are also most likely RSOs who operate their facilities. But when it comes to a public facility, it's not under the, you know, the guise of the rifle and pistol club.
Mr.
Carolyn? As far as the RSO training goes, do you have to be a member of your club to go through this training?
The class is a public NRA class, and there is a fee schedule for it, and the club is substantially, they're contributing or reducing the cost for club members to attain.
But it is open.
But it is open to the public.
Is there any other entity in town that does that?
Yes, there are. There are multiple training organizations in town, gun training facilities, who offer similar classes. We just happen to have RSOs on staff, so our immediate intent was to increase the pool of members to help contribute time to the RSO.
Does anybody have a ballpark figure of how many RSOs we have in Carson?
No, no idea. I would say if we have 60 members, meeting, let's say roughly half of those people attended the last meeting we had, so out of the 30, maybe, I mean, there was a substantial number, 10, but you're also talking about a committed group rather than general public.
How long is that class?
9 hours, one day.
Okay. Well, I'd be willing to jump in on that. I was at the meeting where several members of the public expressed an interest in being an RSO. The list seemed pretty long, so I don't think that finding volunteers would be a tough job, but the question would be for you, I guess, Jennifer, is there any room to hire
an RSO once we get a fee schedule going and revenue generating. So no, it's just his job, like the park ranger's job. He opens up that range every day. He watches it. He closes it and goes home.
Well, I think there's probably several questions that I probably need to address. I'm going to try to hit them. One, I want to thank the club. They were able to provide our park rangers, two of them, to go through the range safety officer course. So I want to let you know that we have them both now certified, which is wonderful. And they were essentially sponsored by the club, which is so beneficial, and we appreciate that. Can they sit at the range all day? No, they can't, because we have over 8,000 acres that we have to manage, and we need them out of the field. Are they going by regularly right now? Are they doing spot checks for the fringe and ammunition? They're there, you know, on a regular basis, but they're not stationed. They're obviously operating, you know, the firing lines. To go to Member Howell's question, we're in sort of a weird spot with our range. Before, it was essentially unmanaged. Good, bad, or otherwise, that's how the facility was. Knowing that we have these design deficiencies, we've added this enforcement component with the range safety officers to try to help make sure people are shooting and impacting the backstop and are acting in a more appropriate manner, because when they weren't managed, there was a lot of, you know, inappropriate activity happening out there that puts people at risk, not just at the landfill, but at the range itself. So we've tried to kind of do this hybrid. Is that pretty typical? No. At the Washoe Range, I worked for Washoe for 17 years, the public line is a paid employee. He's actually a range master certification. They don't have that anymore. It's like a training officer. NRA has, you know, really modified the type of training and the titles that they provide. But he's armed, and he runs that public line and that public line only. And then they have staff, park rangers, and other staff at Washoe County that are trained to fill in for him. So when he goes on vacation, they can run that public line. For all of the other ranges at Washoe County, they pay, and they have RSOs, as Mr. Hilla said, to operate their activity, the rental of that facility, whether it's one day, whether it's one match. They have to turn in their certification. They have to go through an annual meeting, much like the sports leagues do. They meet on a regular basis. They have a manual. They have to sign saying that they'll meet the standard operating procedures. All of those things happen. Those are things we can easily incorporate into our operation, but we have to see how that's going to happen. As far as if we had the revenue source to hire staff, of course we could do that, but we'd have to have that authorization from the voter board of supervisors. There's a process that I have to go through to request that. We're right now in the middle of our budget process. This would be the time to make any of those requests. We do have other needs in the Parks Department as well. They're all important to me, and I think all important to the community, so I think it's about having a funding source and how are we going to pay for that. Or do we look at another, like a contractor to provide that? There's also the liability side of it as well. So when we have these volunteer range safety officers, eventually they do need to be a member of the club, because the club has the insurance to cover that range safety officer. Right now, when we have our volunteers from the city, they're covered under our workers' compensation program. So if I have a trail building project or an adopt a park or something like that, and someone gets injured, they're covered through that. But I don't know that we have that civil liability component, and we've never really considered it because we didn't have volunteers acting as range safety officers. So it's something we could work with risk management and our VA's office to pursue if we needed to, or if we wanted to go in that direction. But right now, I'm not sure that the city, you know, would be in a position for that piece of it. So being a member of the club is beneficial. If you become a range safety officer and then you become a member of the club, my understanding is that they would be covered under the insurance. So that is important right now to this hybrid operation that we're operating under. Does that answer your question? Okay. Sorry, I'm long to get there, but.
So.
Getting back to Carol's question on this house, has the decision then been made that RSOs will be required for individual users? Has that decision been made? Are we starting from there?
Well,
The city did ask the club to provide range safety officers now to help assist us in the Sunday operation. So they are providing, as Mr. Hill said, range safety officers to help make sure that the manner in which people are using that facility is how it's designed, because that wasn't occurring.
Understand. But a year from now, or 2 years from now, we get fixed that we made the decision that we need RSOs out there to...
No, I think this group could really assist us with that long-term vision and how we operate it. So the current agreement with the club is goes through April. So they're trying really hard to work with us, and they've been wonderful. And they've stepped up way more than, you know, we've even asked, you know, asked them to do. But it only goes through April. So what's going to happen after April? I don't have the staff or the financial resources in my current budget to operate the facility. So what are we going to do? Are we going to continue to work with the club? And as I said, we're going to talk with them, and we're trying to work on what does that look like? What can the club provide? I can't speak on their behalf, but I know from a city standpoint, I don't have the resources in my current budget to be able to do that. But if we look at another operation or a contract or something else as we make these improvements, I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially if there were fees associated. I think that, that has to be incorporated.
Mr. Blackwood? You have another out-of-the-box comment now. I would suggest that you have a chat with the officers at the Capital City Gun Club Shotgun Range, because they already are under contract with the city for managing that recreational facility. They have staffing capabilities. They already have a payroll, and it may be possible you could encourage them to provide or pay or put their with the range officers on their payroll, and then just send you a bill at the end of the month. And that way it eliminates the city from all of that paperwork of figuring out how to hire people and do it. But I firmly believe that we're in an era now where full-time range officers are a must at that facility, and that's probably only going to give us a short-term recruit.
I'll look into that, and we do have an agreement for that facility, which is you know, next to the golf course. I'll look at that agreement, and we can follow up with them and see what options they might be able to assist us with. So thank you for that.
Yes, please. Another suggestion you might think about, just like this task force, setting up a task force to manage that range, made up of all the clubs, businesses, that would be interested in managing that. Everything from taking reservations and insurance and all that type of thing. And a task force can be used for more than just an issue.
And we have a similar arrangement with the sports field. So we have the sports association. They have representation from every league on that work. We have a contract with them, and then there's parameters within that. So I mean, that could be an option. The only challenge with that, and the sports association has it as well, is they're all volunteers, and the accountability and that without some sort of staffing that are paid and dedicated and will show up, you run the challenges for volunteers. Volunteers are wonderful, just like all of you are here giving up your free time. You want to make it worth their while, and unfortunately you have 100 volunteers sign up and maybe only half show up. So the sustainability of that is just my only trepidation with that approach.
That's my concern.
Yeah.
Volunteer.
Which we're having right now with the RSOs.
Yes.
I mean, it's the same situation. But I think that's something we can consider. Mr. Gerald,
what? I know you explained that there's no enforcement action that an RSO would take, and I understand that. But what kind of liability or lack of liability do these guys have when they're out there? I can see at a match where there's some people that are there, everybody is, it's a cohesive group that are gathered to do one thing, and that
or a CCW or something like that. But when you have the general public out there, people coming from California and so forth to shoot, and you're getting non-compliant, what authority can that officer have or does that or don't have? And what are we going to do in that set of circumstances? Because I see a huge liability, because coming from 25 years of law enforcement, there's a lot of people out there that should not even be evidence. Yeah, in the range situation, I think, thankfully enough, I would, in the 52 years I've been alive in this community, we've only had one homicide out there. So, I think it's important to get some additional training, maybe for ourselves, is to not to be a fit worker, but to recognize some of these dangers and
our park rangers. Do have the ability to cite. They're not post-certified, but they can cite. Typically, if there's an issue, the sheriff's office really needs to be called. But the park rangers do have authority through the municipal code to be able to cite to address that low-level misdemeanor issue. Anything further really needs to come from the sheriff's office.
Yeah, that's my feeling. You're already dealing with a situation where there's guns present. You know, it's not like going to this park and doing some transients or some out kids or whatever, but you're going to a situation and the guns are there. So certainly something for category one police officer to take care of.
I'd like to go back to Mr. Robinson's comment. As far as the range being up to safety and code, would we even really need the RSO in a sense? Douglas County operates without an RSO. As far as I know, and they have the fee structure to sustain the operation, and it's near their landfill. So
I've contacted Douglas County's park director. I actually saw him today. They make over $20,000 with a $2 drop-in fee at that facility, and then they also have an option for a $50 annual pass, and that's incorporated in that $20,000. He thanked us today for, you know, increasing the fees right now. But they do have a self-managed facility. It's a smaller facility than ours, a little different shooting, but it is an unmanaged pay-as-you-go facility. There is some different measures when you go in. You get an envelope, so the you get hit with the rules numerous times, and I'm sure the DA's office would love how they do that piece of it. And I gathered all that information. So you're going to pay your $2. You take your envelope, you rip off this one piece, you keep it so it shows that you've paid and gone into the facility. So then when staff goes around to check to make sure you have that, similar to California, you know, beaches, and you have your little tab, you know, that you get, that you paid in that little iron measure. And then the rules are on that envelope. And then you go in and you have the rules on the sign there. And then the rules are, I mean, you're hit frequently with those guidelines. But it's a very clean facility, so the money that they bring in, they patrol it on a regular basis and clean it on an active part. But they don't manage, you know, the range. There are homes on the other side of where they're aiming. It says in the language on the envelope that you get, I am aware that this is near whatever, and then these are the rules for this facility. So you acknowledge that right when you walk in the door.
We eliminate a huge problem we're having as far as RSOs go, that as long as we get the range into minimum compliance of the safety regulations, that we might not even need to have this conversation on RSOs.
So I think what we'll do is when we get to future agenda item, which is coming up soon, we can put a couple of these issues for discussion on that, so that we can't make any binding decisions today, but we can put it on a future agenda item where all of us can then vote or send a direction to someone. So we'll move that to a future discussion. Mr. Gillis?
Mr. Cabrera, the issue of liability is one of the foremost issues that the club is discussing. Absolutely. We feel that we are there as representatives of the city. Although we are members of the club, we are acting on the city's behalf when we're there. What I would like to know, is it possible to become registered as a volunteer? The RSOs who will be present and operating out there become volunteers of the city, therefore being indemnified for liability through the city rather rather than through the club itself. Second question.
I can look into that.
Okay.
Put that on a future agenda item too.
Okay. And then there was one other.
I'll come back to you.
Yeah.
Okay, then we'll let's see what next is my report. Oops, I turned it off. I'm still not muted right there. We have new microphones. Can everybody hear? Oh, that's good. I wanted to double check that on the new microphones. So on the funding, most of that will really come after we get the report that gives us what's out there for layout. But as Ms. Budge indicated earlier, the city has already authorized that we will pay for the engineer, and then we'll see what comes up with for each of the arenas, and then we'll come together and decide which ones have higher priority, where we're going to get the money to do them, look at some of the different options. So I don't have a lot to report on that one at this time, but I would like to just comment too that the operations group certainly could look around the country for similar type facilities like ours and look at some different options on what do they charge, you know, their tiered fees and things like that. So it will help us begin the overall discussion of where we're going to go for the future. So just a thought for Mr. Sean over there. So I don't really, if anyone has any questions on funding, be happy to try and answer them. But until we get a report later this week, I won't have a lot of items to throw out there. Mr. Bonkowski?
I would think that as part of the operations committee, in conjunction with funding, you're also going to want to look at how you collect these, whether it's a man, a gate, or if it's the envelopes, like they have at the state parks, off the top and drop their envelope in. So I think all of these groups, they're all working on different components of this, but all of those components are going to come back together and all fit with one another. So once all these ideas come back and we're discussing them at these meetings, there's going to be a lot of overlap that we'll try to integrate all that. So at the end of this, that we have kind of a comprehensive and cohesive plan where everything fits.
Mr. Davis?
So I have one more quick comment. I completely agree. One thing that I would really like to consider is if we go down the road, the path of a fee-based structure for use, rather than provide RSOs, the club may be willing to provide, it's a lot easier to find one volunteer or two volunteers than it is six. Just think if you were proposing, I'm thinking outside the black, outside the box that goes in our firm, at the bottom of the hill, if you were to have a stopgate, just a cone set up saying, please stop here, pay a fee, where you are acknowledging taking the risks, entering the facility, therefore paying a fee. I mean, this could be implemented fairly rapidly, which would alleviate a huge stress on the club. If we could start collecting fees, we could then assist with the manning of that location versus providing actual RSOs to or enforcement during the operation on Sundays. Just go put that out there.
Mr. Geron?
I think that's a great idea, but on top of, right back to the beginning, where are we going to get the funds to create these envelopes that can use the parts, put your fees in, tear your cab off, lay it on your dash, or keep it in your possession? So we obviously have to come up with a new set of rules, but the funding, right back to that. Going to cost some money to produce those documents and then the signs to go with it. But the repetitive signs, I think, is a great idea that, you know, on that road, where that main gate is, and then as you get, before you get to the range, when you get to the range, at the parking area, and up, you know, near the firing line, having all those things posted, as well as on the document that you are on, you put your money in and sign and put your receipt in there. I think
really great. I don't know what the DA's office could add to that, but that would be a great idea, great thing to do for that.
Thank you. I just wanted to say we are in the middle of our budget process. As a placeholder, we have a capital improvement program. I did fill out the paperwork just as a placeholder, not knowing what these costs were going to come forward. But as we get costs, the board wanted to consider identifying any capital improvement program funding. We have our paperwork in just as a placeholder for that. So I just wanted to let you know that I did think about this and make sure that we have something in there and not lose our opportunity.
Well, I will say at the last meeting is a reminder, Ms. Scott had indicated, you know, that she would even run a fundraiser, which is sometimes how you can get your seed money to do what we're discussing here. Brad and I were fortunate enough, and Jennifer, we went to an event that the chamber put on as a fundraiser for the seed money for the community center to do the lobby out there, because the board of supervisors, we authorized and did the work inside the theater for the new seats and things, but then the community came together and said, oh, we need a little more, you know, you gotta help a little. At the last Park and Rec committee meeting, that whole board really started to get the notion that we have to do it together as a community. So we had a lot of groups that we, as Ms. Fudge said, there's lots of competing needs for repair, like at the radio control center we heard the other day. So we kind of threw out the idea that the groups themselves have to have some skin in the game too, and so making a little matching. So when I look at the funding group, that's one of the things we might come up with is a fundraiser, which could be an organized tournament or something like that, but all of the money would go into maybe buying an Iron Ranger, maybe the cone sets, maybe buying envelopes. That would be our front-end money, because I don't see that as a huge amount of dollars, that it could be reasonable. What was it, Carol, we did on that first fundraiser? We raised how much for the bathrooms?
I think it's $3,600,
$3,800. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not sure that those would cost a lot, and maybe when the funding committee's working, we'll try to come up maybe with some fun thing we can do and get it started so that, you're right, we're not out 2 years from now. That what can we do right now to get started? So help me and put your thinking caps on. Who knows, maybe Sportsman Warehouse, maybe a few businesses that really make their money from the range. Maybe some of those people from CCW courses and things like that will put in and say, hey, we want to get the range up and running. We want to help. So there might be ways. I would think the more important part is that we understand how much it costs. So if we're looking operationally at these four ideas and you can bring it back and we like it, except you want to implement X, then we have the target to go after the
fundraiser. We're still under contract, though, to Carson Rifle and Pistol Club until April, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So they would be the ones that we would have to address to do something. I mean, they're the one that's in charge of that range right now through April. So if we were to put on a fundraiser, I would think we'd have to go to Rifle and Pistol Club.
I think we have several nonprofit partners that could all assist. We do have the Carson City Parks Foundation. That's wonderful, and they're actually going to be holding all the money that was raised from the gala the other night with the theater as our avenue to be able to do that. We do have a donation account at the city as well that's rolled over and doesn't get swept for general funds. So there's a lot of ability to be able to be the fiscal agent for those funds. Relatively easy.
Mr. I was just thinking out loud outside the box. If maybe we could set up a sponsorship program on each bay, kind of like the golf course. This he is sponsored by this. So this bay is sponsored by this gun shop, or even I offered my barber shop would sponsor a bay.
Oh, we got that in writing.
So maybe open that up, if that can be some seed money.
If the operations group could look at that and what that structure would look like, that would really be helpful. We use that in our sports fields. Obviously, you see on the outfield fences, every business in town has their name on it. And they have a structure and fees the things for that. And it's a great opportunity to do that. And a time frame, so you don't, you know, get your name on forever for $100, you know. So.
Yeah, I even think, as charities, I used to sponsor teams on T-shirts. So it was $120 a year. It wasn't once.
Right.
Hi, I'm back again. Oh, good. So I think that's a great idea. Super great idea. Okay. Mr. Keller. Oh, he might have some funds. Go ahead.
Yeah, Aaron Keller, for the record. The Department of Wildlife has funding that we can get moving with at any time. We would just need some assurances, and we would also need to identify what we want to fund now as opposed to next fiscal year. But we'd need some assurances as far as, like, because we have useful life with all of our funding, that, you know, we want them to change the use agreement of the range, or pick up and move the range, or anything like that in the future. So, but yeah, we have higher education funding that we use to what's the range.
You're our new best friend.
Mr. Bonkowski?
Yeah, I would think that in the next report coming out should be long range planning. If we look at relocating range, which is a possibility, that would be in that long range planning. So you would know, and that would know your in advance, you know, maybe a participant, stakeholder in that plan, so you could allocate funding accordingly. So if the plan is that we would have the funds in 20 years to relocate it, you're going to know what the useful life is and how to allocate those funds and when to stop allocating capital funds because of a relocation.
Yeah, and the Department of Wildlife in this Carson City are already in a sub-grant agreement for the restrooms, for the range upgrades we did last year. So we're already in a sub-grant. If we picked up and moved a range, there is a potential that the city would have to pay funding back to the state, and then we would in turn give it back to the Fish and Wildlife Service under our Hunter Education Grant. So that is a big hammer in this argument, is like, if you decide to pick up a move, there are useful life on the stuff that we already have at the range.
Right, and I would assume that we'll take those timelines into account in our long-range planning, so we wouldn't want to be accepting grant money. If we come up with a 20-year plan again, I'm just picking a number, that we're not going to accept grant funds that have been extended that 20-year period or exceed that 20-year period.
Right.
I guess I'm not being very clear. We already have the gates were funded through the grant funds, the restrooms. Those already have a useful life. They're,
what? How long?
They're all separate. Each grant is separate depending on what it is. So.
Do you know what our longest one is at this point? Are we?
Oh, we just finished one this year. Yeah, the restroom. We just
how
finished.
Far out? Is it a 15-year use?
I would guess concrete, 10 years.
Maybe if you can help us, Aaron and Jennifer, just to run through what we have and be able to provide the committee by saying, okay, restrooms. If you could give us the time frames that we have on items so that Mr. Blackwood's group, when they're doing it, can certainly make sure we're on the right.
Yeah, and Jen and I can get together and make sure that everybody knows kind of where we're at now. I just want to kind of get it on everybody's radar that if we are, as a collective, thinking about moving the range, there is some stuff that we need to do our homework on, so we don't bind ourselves up in the long run. Also, as the department's kind of viewing the range as a whole, we want to have a gem
in the capital, and so we have funding and we're ready to move forward, but we don't want to get so far ahead that we're doing these capital improvements and then something happens with the landfill, and which is kind of, like you said, Sean, the elephant in the room, like, we want to have a spot that we can put money into and we can make it better than the Clark County Shooting Complex, or, you know, on par with that, to where we can show, we can bring the legislature up and show them how to run, rerun the facility, and it's safe, and that firearms, you know, aren't the devil, right? And that we can have high school shooting teams going out there and getting excited about it. And we can put potentially millions of dollars into it over time, but you don't want to get the cart so far ahead that you drop back and you're like, oh, 5 years from now, looking back. So
I see really the importance of the landfill and Mr. Blackwood's group really determining when that glide path's going to get. Is it in 20 years? Because then all the planning can properly link up to your funding sources.
So yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yep.
So, okay, these are 10-year projects, 20-year projects. And will they fit? And then where are we? So I think that gives you that group a little bit of their homework and where we're going with that.
So in your packet for the first meeting, we provided you a funding overview of our remaining obligations with the Department of Wildlife and the grant funds. So that was in your packet. It's a total of $115,269. The longest obligation of those each agreement is 10 years, as Mr. Keller mentioned. So 10 years from June 28th of 2018. So that's the restroom facility, which was a $44,225 amount for that one phase. I'm sure he would probably incorporate the $8,000 that was spent before as part of that project, probably in that lifespan too, because it was sort of a multiple phase project.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. And so that's in your packet, and those are the obligations. Like, if we have to move tomorrow, we would be obligated through those agreements. And then make that right.
I don't see it. Hopefully, I'm not hearing 10 years, and hopefully, hearing 25 years. But
all the other agreements were identified 2 years.
Yeah. And it's all based off materials and welcome to the project. And if we do a classroom or something along those lines, it's obviously a little longer.
Which is better. Land and Water Conservation Fund is typically 25 year minimum. We're looking at that. So this is a pretty flexible grant.
I don't want to pick on a guy that offered up funding. It's just a little specificity. So the types of the improvements we're talking about, construction, building dirt, all of that would be within this educational, I assume it's Pittman Robertson funds, or maybe it's not.
Yeah, it is. Oh. Yep. Yeah, last year we granted $38,000 for all the dirt work that we did, which was ultimately given to public works. The majority of anything else to do the dirt work we did last year.
A lot of this is going to come down to the design on the current location as well. And if it can be designed so that it's safe going in the future, then this is a good point. But if it's not, I can tell you that my personal thoughts on paying back these grant funds, I just heard you say that potentially you could put millions of dollars into it over a period of time. I would gladly trade those millions of dollars to pay back $115,000 or $135,000. And in fact, on the rescue facility, it's a package. Mm-hmm. It can be relocated.
Yeah. So you can relocate them all.
Right. Right. So I think that this is all really good information. Thank you for bringing it up. So but I think that there's many ways to work around this to make it work for all of us.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of wanted to speak up. And I was almost going to, I kind of wanted to do it during the funding. But it goes along with Sean's stuff on operations. If we can make it work at this location, fine. Because we're already kind of committed to that, and we already have an old master plan and some stuff going on. But if the
the decision is made to move it, then we need to just make sure that we do our homework on the restrooms. We potentially rent a crane, put it back on the truck. Over here, we pay for concrete, put it down over there. Same with the gates, the dirt work. I don't know, I'd have to figure that out, but maybe that's something we can offset with trucking or something, and using that as a source for the new site. But yeah, we're on board. We want to build a classroom. We want to have a site where we can potentially house a game warden or something to be help with the law enforcement side of it, at least have a presence up there. It could be an RSO type office or a volunteer office where they can check into there and people could ask advice or come to the office. So we're on board. We want to help as best we can. Just don't want to get the cart too far ahead of the plan side of it.
There's no more questions on that one, but we'll move on to the next committee report, Mr. Blackwood.
Long distance planning issue appears to be variable from 5 months to 5 years. In talking with people and doing research and looking around, it appears to me that it's not a question of are we going to be able to keep the range in its current location. I believe that's a done deal. It's gone. The only question is it gone in 5 months or is it gone in 5 years? But it's gone. So the next issue that comes up is how much money do we spend to try to keep it functional for the shooters until it's gone? Or do we not spend very much money and we just go whole hog to the long range plan of relocation? Because that's really going to be the answer. We need to get the shooting range out someplace where we don't infringe on any of our neighbors and we are in such a location that we can keep the neighborhood from infringing upon the gun range. Beyond that, it appears the gun range, in my opinion, and in a lot of other people I've discussed this with, is going to be closed. It's not only the entity of the rifle and pistol range, but we also have the shotgun range to consider because it's kind of boxed in the hole over there. People have taken pot shots at that range for a long time to get it relocated, and the golfers complain miserably when the range shot down on their golf carts while they're playing around. So that's another issue. So I believe the direction to go into for a long-range plan, and that long-range plan is 1 year to 5 years. And that's a relocation of all shooting entities into one spot. Kind of like a version of the Clark County facility, not quite as stupidly designed as that one, but on the order of that facility. And get this located in a spot where we don't have to worry about infringement. Now, there is a facility that's called the Mustang Ranch Range that's located, if you look at the intersection of Highway 50 and 95, you go north on 95 towards Fernley about 2 miles, and on the right-hand side, there's a range there that was built, as I understand it, years ago as a military training facility. But it already has the complete infrastructure that is needed for our shooting requirements. It already has bays. It has 1,000 or 2,000 yard long range facility. It has told a kill house, shoot house, I should say, not a kill house. And it already has a road. The only thing, the two things it doesn't have, it doesn't have water, doesn't have electricity. We don't have water, electricity where we're at now. So that's a possibility. Now, whether it's possible for the Carson City to negotiate some kind of a lease agreement on that facility, I don't know. But it would sure be a cheap way to immediately have a place for everybody to go shoot. The only difference is it's 30, 40 miles away. So that's kind of where Oh, the other thing too is that I have in the process of contacting all the various shooting clubs and asking them for their wish list of what they would like to see in a new shooting facility. An unpractical, if the ladies want to have pink roses out there of their shooting bait, then we should provide pink roses for their shooting bait. But that we're putting together a wish list of whatever all the shooting organizations would like to have. Then we'll take that and we'll boil it down to something practical and, more importantly, something that fits the budget. So that's where we're at.
Questions for Ms. Porter?
Yes, ma'am. Maybe a clarification on parks, but given Carson City's small, compact area, where can we find that remote, safe area within the confines of Carson City County or can we?
I have one in mind. The city already owns some land that is surrounded by BLM on three sides. I've been trying to get a hold of BLM to see if it'd be an option to lease those three adjoining parcels, like through a recreation public purpose lease, to see if that might be a feasible option. The city side itself probably wouldn't be able to be sufficient enough, but I think it might be an opportunity to partner with them. So when I get that answer, I'll report back to you on that potential location. As far as other locations, I think a couple people have mentioned that they have some thoughts. You want to email me, we can do some research into those properties and kind of see if that's, you know, potential locations within the city. Mr. Blackwood did let us know about that other location. We're looking into the ownership of that and, you know, if that's an option as well.
Would it be prudent to throw out those ideas of the locations for not duplicating our work? I was looking at the John D. Winters Centennial Park area. North of that is a plateau with an access road.
We're looking at the exact same location. So the city has, I think, like 120 acre parcel out there, surrounded on three sides. It's right on the Lane County border. So
it's not flat, but it's pretty flat.
There's a lot of ravines. I mean, obviously, you could design it in a way that you would need to. The most expensive thing would probably be building a road, but there is sort of a full line road that goes out there now. But I'm in the process of contacting BLM to see what that land designation is and if there a lease would even be possible on those lands, or if we need to, you know, pursue some other avenue to look at those designations within BLM.
Yeah, that would be a perfect spot because there's nothing other than that gypsum plant. That's a couple hills over. There's nothing at all out there.
There's a lot of non-motorized recreation that goes out there, so that's why I want to check with BLM to see what their designation is. If identified for disposal for lease, then, you know, that would be a really easy process. We lease land all the time.
Yeah, and then the buildup of it would enhance the safety of the range itself. You know, we can expand on that a lot more than what we have now. But yeah, on the same page.
Yeah, I reached out to a local resident that I know and brought up the same property, and he seemed to recollect that there was like a mountain biking trail, single tracks up there that were just built by volunteers and
that's further to the west.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we're talking about that.
Okay.
Jennifer, 15 years ago, when we first took a crack at trying to create this consolidated shooting organization and facility, we looked at a parcel that is Deer Run Road, south of the river, and immediately when you cross the river, this parcel is right on the left-hand side, so it nests between Deer Run Road, Carson River, and then the dirt road that goes up to the waste treatment lake that's up on top. There's about, as I recall, there's like 1,000 or 1,200 acres in that parcel. And it provided...
Is it BLM land?
It is BLM land, except for, as I recall, there was a couple of small parcels that were down right on the side of the river that were privately owned. But the nice thing about it is it provided an excellent location for the trap and ski clubs, fields, and then down below is there's a drop-off canyon that goes down next to the river down there where provided like 100, 150 foot backstop for all the handgun, rifle, pistol shooting in that area, plus additional canyons for perhaps boarding place course or law enforcement stuff. But it's a pretty big piece of land. When we were fiddling with them, we sort of ticked off PLM and they ran us off. So if it's something that can be revisited.
Well, that is a great working relationship with the local PLM office. So you can find out what those parcels are. I'll ask them about this. We will move on to agenda item 6, which is the agenda item. Here you have the RSO discussion on whether they can become city volunteers and whether or not we can vote long term. And then one of the other ideas was BLM leasing and check on a few properties to see whether we can lease some land. And then I'd like to discuss the fencing. I think this committee should really look at what the recommendations were and really how far we want to go into the fencing. So I'd like to see that as a future agenda discussion. Anybody else have something you'd like to put on the next one? Besides standard reports.
I don't know if mine's an action item necessarily, but I would like to come to some sort of consensus if we're staying, if we're going, how we're moving before we spend any money past the engineering. Just because I don't think we should put money in the fencing and no offense, like signage and things like that that are removing. That seems like we're getting too far ahead.
So I don't know if that's an action item. I'm gonna admit I didn't have anything in my wheelhouse when we started this that we were moving in 5 months to 5 years. So that wasn't in the known plan either. So I think that's a bigger discussion item too, because I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to invest anybody's couple hundred thousand or $300,000 or $400,000 if the plan is truly to move. That I'd rather invest that money in the new location then. So I think that's a major discussion, because I thought that I heard Mr. Cooley indicate, I thought we were looking at a 20-year, 25-year horizon. So I think we're just really going to have to vet that well at the next meeting, which should work out. We have the plans back from the engineer, so we can.
I think that 20-year horizon is when you're going to see equipment. That still doesn't mean before that.
Still there.
They're still behind that.
But the plan that we received gave us options to maintain it, which was things like baffles. I mean, it just because the landfill is there does not mean we have to move. It means we have to mitigate. The question is whether the mitigation is less expensive than a move.
That's the root issue right there. Right. Is in dollars. I mean, it comes down to if you're going to $1 million into a place,
well, or versus we can put the $500,000 to the million in it, and then the facility's good to go for 50 years. And that's really the information we need so that the committee is making sound recommendations back to the Board of Supervisors, spending this money to do this or not.
But I think the driver here is going to be that we need to make a comprehensive list of alternative locations, and we need to vet those locations. And if those locations are appropriate, then we're looking at keeping the driver range right where it is. So I think that's the process in the order that we should be doing.
I'll coordinate with the city property manager and the services. And we'll really let the whole city and see what opportunities we can do some site visits, maybe we can bring it out with us
If we have a couple that we think might be viable, we can look at those locations.
Yeah, and we'd reach out to Jeff Page as well. If there is a location around us that would be appropriate, and we can do a regional facility in Justin Lyon County, in Carson City, I think that that's also a viable option.
I agree, that's much more valuable than all the way for currently. I think that one's nice, but it's 30, 40 minutes away versus 10 minutes.
Like I said, it's immediate. I keep hearing rumors about a housing development that's going to be down west of the current rifle range. Is that a reality, or is that just a rumor?
There is a development that's going through the rezoning process off of Draco Lake that is moving forward. I've had many people contact me. Is there a housing development going where the rifle range is actually located? And that's absolutely not true. It's not even possible. It would literally take an act of Congress to change that. We received the land at where the rifle and pistol range is located through a landfill and has the deed restrictions and requirements that go with it. And a housing development is not one of those. So I do want to just dispel that piece of it, but the one at Draco Way is actively moving forward.
The question is that if they move in, you know, it's like you build an airport, and then you build houses around the airport, and then the people that bought the houses complain because the airport's too noisy. And the same thing happens with shooting ranges. You know, it's incrementalism. You know, you take a little piece, a little piece, a little piece, and pretty soon, you know, they're jumping up and down and screaming because you're making too much noise, you're throwing lead over the fence, you're doing everything else. So that's why I firmly believe that relocation, again, is that 5 months or 5 years, I don't know, is the only answer, because we've got the landfill on one side, we've got the housing development on the other side, we've got the canoers going down the Carson River on the other side. I mean, we're in a losing situation.
Assuming we get the engineer's report back for our next meeting, will we be able to set up then a preliminary schedule of what we can do to reopen the range using live ammunition and get it back open to the public as much as possible while we're considering and working on all these?
So I want to be clear, what I'm getting back from the engineers is a quote for their services. I'm not going to have a report for them. You can discuss, then I know we'll get to when the next meeting is going to be. But I'll have a quote for their services, and it'll probably be, and right now you cannot get to the rifle range right now to shoot the grades and get the data and information that you need. You can't get that right now with the current weather, and as we're going to get more snow, we're not going to be able to get that accurate data. So I want to be open. It's not that there's excuses, but there's some realities with some of what we're up against. We'd probably be about a month to get the shooting bays first, and then we'll get the portions of the range afterwards. So we're not going to have a full breadth of what the true costs are for the entire project for a little bit of time.
And then follow-up question. There was a report on the NRA, and I haven't seen that yet.
So in my director's report, I provided an update on that. I've been in constant contact with them. They've actually been really wonderful. The person that assessed the site is working with NRA, and they kind of passed back the report. I haven't received the hard copy of that report yet. What I provided to you at the first meeting was their verbal analysis, which corroborates a lot of what was in that other report. So we're not going to see any big surprises, I don't anticipate. But when I get the hard copy report, you guys will be the first to see it.
Yeah.
Discussion for our pistols and potential action on the next meeting. Is that limited strictly only to prison officers, or is that a general arson discussion?
I want it to be a broad
arson
discussion, because I think we brought lots of issues up today.
Absolutely.
But if we want to take any action or any direction, we'll need it as a possible action item on the next one. So I want it to be a broad agenda item.
So we want an RSO item that's going to be an action item, and you want it to be broad enough so our obviously our conversation can go over and discuss potential locations embedding that property, so whether it's BLM or otherwise. Wanted fencing or other items other than the standing. We're going to keep those standing reports there so that way you can report that forward.
Mr. Geraldine, did you have one to?
The rubber tires, do we want that to be an action item? That's something that we thought of.
I think the tires we've actually incorporated as an option that Ms. Budge will be given the vendor, the engineer, to use as one of the consideration points. Mr. Cooley's going to look into really how many tire inventory, used tire inventory, so I can make that clear, that can be maybe donated into the project. So it'll be incorporated in, in that. But does anyone see anything else specifically at the next meeting you see us needing to take action on or working? And the volunteers being added on to the city, the RSO, that's part of the RSO, but make sure you please remember to look at the adding them on as Carson City volunteers for the workers' comp.
I'll follow up with risk management and the DA's office on if there's a potential for that.
Okay. Rick, do the tire shops in town, do they bring their used tires into the landfill, or do they send them to the recyclers, right? Ones we get from a lot of the various mechanics, things like there's our tires. Most of the general use tires we're getting are from local companies. I was wondering if the engineers look at that alternative and decide that it's viable, we would want to reach out to the town, like the Schwab, and say, instead of picking them up and paying the recycler to take them out of their hands, we'll take them for free. For X period of time and so many tires.
Well, put a little plaque out for that.
Yeah,
a donation.
Well, no, the old Big O used to be, well, if you wanted tires, it would be free. They let it just go under your car. So I would imagine, I mean, it took us to pay for disposal of them. So, you know, it behooves everybody to kind of use one.
Okay, then we'll move on to the final public comment. If anyone in the public would like to come on up and give us your name and
my name is John Berry for the record, and I'd like to comment to the board that I agree very much 100% with Mrs. Blackwood about relocating the range. He didn't use the term, but I will. It's called urban enroachment. The discharge of firearms is a rural activity. And urban areas, they're not compatible. And we were talking just a little while ago about a housing development going out just west of the shooting range. I've been here since 1974. I've seen these places just get devoured by urban enroachment. I can guarantee you when there's houses built in, they're going to start being killed. I don't like the noise, I'm scared that this goes on. You've got a ring, somewhere between a down to the north and a gravel pit to the south, gravel pit to the south. I really think Mr. Clark has got an excellent idea that would just really kind of ruins the whole.
Any further public comment? Okay, do we have any more? Maybe it's just a matter of we originally had a schedule that was put out for the next meeting, and we were still going to be getting this room. Everybody like our microphones? So we'll keep it. Is whether we do 2 weeks to really wait a month because we won't have any reports. And I hate to push this on the 2 weeks. Does anybody have a problem if we go to the 1 month when we'll have results? And how long it'll take you to get the BLM answers and things. I don't have a problem pushing this judge to 2 weeks, but is it reasonable?
I have one specific thing, and it's on the future action for the RSOs. Not necessarily the volunteer portion of that. However, as I sit here today, we currently have a requirement that 3 RSOs need to be on staff at any one time. I don't know where that requirement came from.
We'll discuss that on the agenda item as a full, broad discussion on RSOs.
Perfect.
So how many?
Absolutely. And
what days are they required? All
the problem is I don't know how sustainable that current level is. So if we push it out a month, we're in a very bad situation. I would rather meet in 2 weeks to discuss that specific issue, or if that discussion can be had with the City House. The decision you make on reducing, that's what I'm talking about, reducing the number of RSOs so that we can make it a more manageable activity. The current level is unsustainable. Correct. This is for the public operation on Sundays. Is it possible to reduce it to 1 per shift and that person can walk throughout the facility through all operations?
We can discuss that. I think that's something operationally that we can work out.
That's perfectly fine. If we can do it outside, that's my only limitation on putting it off for a month. That could be determined outside.
As far as delaying our next meeting for a month, I kind of feel if we meet in 2 weeks, we can open it up for like operations and have a discussion and help see on the fees and this group work together on helping with. So I would rather us not push this.
Will you be ready, Sean?
As far as
a report and some discussion on some fee options and ideas on what you think. So would you like that as an action item then instead of just a report?
Either or.
Let's put possible action, because that way if we want to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, we'd have the authority. If we don't list it as an act, we can always not take action. But we can't take it if it's not listed as an action item. So I'll put the pressure on Sean's.
So I just want to clarify, so when we have these meetings, it's subject to the open meeting law. We have to have a staff report, and any information that you want to consider ready to go for that board has to be posted 3 days in advance, requires review in advance to that. So I'm happy to accommodate whatever meeting schedule that you want, but just know that if you basically have a week to figure stuff out and get it to me so I can have it available for your whole committee. It's not a lot of time for you to do due diligence and report back, unfortunately, with the open meeting law requirements.
Well, I look at...
If it's just discussion and reports like we're doing, we can easily turn an agenda around, no problem. But when there's a lot of supporting materials, or if you're having them look at fee schedules and consider things, you might want to just have a little bit more time for that discussion.
Well, we have the 6th tentatively scheduled for the next meeting. That's 3 weeks out. Well, just when they shy 3 weeks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
Good with that date. They get it 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think that is.
And we'll email you out our final date for any materials that we'll need for that review for the agenda. We can email that out so that way you know. Yeah. That way the public gets to see all of the materials that you're providing. So if they have questions, they can show up and be able to ask.
Yes.
Okay. You're on that. All right. So March 6th is the next meeting. And are we keeping it? What was the time?
We have 1 to 3. We already put a hold on the room. 1 to 3 in case.
I'm just doing it so the public will hear in case they're interested in attending. So March 6th from 1 to 3. Okay. Anything else to come before?
Because they only mentioned.
We use that as a training class out there. So maybe we have to use it.
Okay. If we have no further business, if there's no objection, then I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.
Don't get your shovels out. Then watch you do the little brackets.
It keeps coming. It's coming.
Let me know. I'm sorry.
Yes.